Hello and welcome back to The Inverted Castle, a Metroidvania enthusiast podcast. I'm the angel on your shoulder, aka the lame one, Eric Fox, and joining me as always is literally the devil, currently going by the pseudonym Tom Blight.
Whoa, I missed something in this game.
I'm being a little abstract here. It's mostly about a couple of jerks giving people advice. That's what most of the story is, but...
Also, I was going to swear at you again, but I did that for Kazooie, so that's old.
Ironically, that would have been much more relevant to the game we're actually talking about, Knit Underground, a game developed by the solo developer Niflis, released in 2012. It's a game that kind of combines the aspects of previous works of his, in particular Knit and Within a Deep Forest, which ends up being a very large maze game, more so than Metroidvania, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
You, as a mute protagonist, accompanied by two fairies, kind of navigate an entirely underground world filled with little critters and dudes, and do random fetch quests, as well as have a bunch of dialogue moments in between all of the climbing, clambering, turning into a ball and jumping.
Yeah.
It's a weird game.
So here's my dumb argument for if you squint at this, it's a Metroidvania.
Okay, lay it on me.
All right. So the game is split out into chapters. Chapter one, you can climb on things and you can use the flower light abilities.
Correct.
Chapter two, you're a ball. You can bounce around. You can press a button to bounce a little higher.
You can press another button to bounce lower, as well as also magnetize to robots occasionally.
Oh, yeah. Magnetize to robots. Chapter 3, they combine those characters into one character, and now you have the combination of those abilities, which, if you squint, is like gaining a traversal ability.
If you embody one character, you have suddenly gained the abilities of the other, I guess.
But... also, the maps that you use in Chapter 1 and Chapter 2 are in Chapter 3, but
yeah,
at least the way that they portray the map in those chapters, it's a much smaller map. I mean, that might just be an illusion. It might just be the full map, and they've just cut off the edges where you can't go.
Yeah, they do a weird thing where you can clearly see other exits that are just impassable, either from the geometry or there's an actual door there. Because they've kind of just sectioned off a piece of the main game. But when you check your map screen, it will not show connection points where you can't actually go within the chapter, which is nice, but also kind of confusing if you're not already understanding the whole point of the chapter, which is here's a tutorial for half of your abilities.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this game, I guess we should probably go into like the broad shape of what it is.
Yeah, sorry, I jumped right into that.
Yeah, so you are playing as a sprite. It's just a tiny little imp slash vaguely humanoid, but ostensibly very tiny. You are mute, which the game kind of jumps right out with its fourth wall breaking humor, where the first person you talk to is literally the developer lying about who you are. And he says, yeah, you're me, you don't remember who you are. And then your character, speaking to the player, says, ignore this guy. I know exactly what I'm doing. I'm going to visit my sister. I'm just mute. And then you kind of go on a mini adventure about visiting the fairy fountain, not unlike Zelda, to grant some wish, which ostensibly is gaining a voice. But what you actually get are two asshole fairies who will speak for you throughout the course of Chapter 3. Chapter 1 ends with you entering a, like, matter transportation tube where it's saying, like, hey, don't mix different creatures in here, otherwise it gets weird. Fade to black, and then, again, the developer just kind of comes on screen and says, and then there's an explosion, don't worry about it. Chapter 2.
And that ends up being that you kind of Large Hadron Collidered your two characters into each other.
Yeah, chapter two being the ball tutorial.
Yeah.
Which, again, you're a ball. You also don't speak. Throughout that whole chapter is just one other dude who follows you around and just decides to call you Bob.
Yeah. That chapter two is such a Shaggy Dog story, too.
I have bad news about chapter three, my man.
I mean, it doesn't surprise me that it all amounts to nothing. And also, I guess, time to come clean. I didn't finish my homework. I put 10 hours into this, and I have not actually rung any of the 5 bells in Chapter 3.
Yeah, ring. Yeah, okay. So, I'm not surprised. This game map is massive, like, surprisingly huge, and to its detriment, in my opinion. But it's a game that pretty much expects you to kind of meander your way everywhere and collect most of the stuff being just random, like, trinkets, items that make more sense in the context of the story, which we'll get into, ancient human artifacts, which they obviously don't understand.
Yeah, buttons from a keyboard, various weird artifacts, rocks, some flowers.
Yeah.
Fairies?
Yeah, yeah, or pixies in this case, that apparently are different. I don't know.
The number of small people that this game has that are apparently distinct is pretty high.
Yeah, it's chock full of little guys. If you're a fan of little guys, you will find an absolute just cavalcade of both, like, the critter variety and the big eyes with personality variety. Again, in my personal opinion, to its detriment, for the latter at least. But yeah, so... Chapter 3. You are part of a religious organization called the Myriadists. They kind of just believe every human religion at the same time.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, they think, calamity is coming, we gotta ring the bells, we wish it was your brother, you'll do.
Well, clearly they thought that Dark Souls was a human religion.
Yes, ring the bells of awakening, I believe. Hey, this one's better because it has more bells. And I think, actually, this game came out after Dark Souls?
1 year after, yes.
Who knows? It may actually be a direct reference. One of the few non-clear fourth wall breaks. But yeah, so there's this crew of the Myriadists, and they've sent you on this mission, and you've explored to your heart's content. You can become a ball. It's not really explained. The ball never really comes up in conversation, nor do you. It's always the fairies. And the game does a weird thing where every time you talk to an NPC, you can choose which fairy you want. Either the goody two shoes, kind of naive, will still accidentally insult the person, or the worst person I've ever met. Yeah, the first one's Dora. Then there's Celia, who just out loud will tell people to go kill themselves.
Yeah, she's got a chip on her shoulder and it's taking it out on everyone.
Absolutely. And neither side really worked for me, I'll be honest. I don't know how you felt.
They were all right. Sometimes the banter was at least somewhat interesting. Celia gets surprising amounts of characterization. Did you find the quest line that takes you to the abbey?
Yes, I did. I think I did every quest line, ultimately.
Nice.
For the most part, yeah. So, yeah, the main quest doesn't matter. Like, I'll straight up say, in fact, again, at the end of ringing all of the bells, the creator comes out and outright says, yeah, it probably didn't matter. And then one of the characters says, well, what was the point of all that? And then he says, it's a metaphor for something that's important to me, which I can appreciate some amount of pretension.
Weird.
I can kind of get what he's going for like, all of the characters are kind of just, you know, muddling through life and trying to find meaning somewhere and often failing. So I can kind of get it, but it's all in a package of dialogue that I found grating and rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah, and including sometimes when you have to translate Morse code.
I did not bother.
I translated it for one of them, realized they weren't saying anything interesting or that would tell me how to, like, do stuff, and stopped.
Yeah. Actually, like the Morse code people, which are the pixies, every time you find one, Dora will pipe up and start explaining some pixie lore, which was, you know, kind of fun, about how pixies from birth will at one point in their lives randomly teleport somewhere on Earth. And I thought that was kind of cute. She says, like, you know, I'm not sure if it's true, but it's a nice story, right? And I thought, yeah. Occasionally, there are moments where I can kind of get into what's going on. The problem is that a lot of the rest of it is, I don't know, there's a nihilistic bent to its humor that I just couldn't grok with.
Yeah, there's a lot of, hey, this is intentionally something that isn't going to go anywhere or doesn't really matter. And it's like, great, you are really making me feel something about your game, but it's not good things. It's, oh, is all of this just kind of a joke on me?
And specifically what you were getting to with the Abby quest, like, when you're going through the storyline quests, I'm going to call them, which kind of expands on the two fairies, their histories as they learn about each other, it gets into like some pretty capital S serious stuff, like Celia is queer and she hasn't been accepted by her family.
Yeah, and her lover got kicked out of school by her family and forced to join a convent.
And she can't understand why she actually likes it at the convent for whatever reason, and doesn't know how to process that. Her dad had an affair. Her dad's also super religious, and she can't understand that dichotomy between instilling her with certain values and then breaking those values.
And the references to him traumatizing her with the religious stuff too.
Exactly. There's stuff there. And also on Dora's end, her having this past of being really depressed, lashing out and behaving poorly with former boyfriends, we'll say, suicidal tendencies. All of these things are brought up. And if it didn't have the context of all of the other dialogue of me already not really liking these characters, it ends up feeling like that old quote about quiet from Metal Gear Solid 5, where suddenly I'm asked to be ashamed of my words and deeds. You didn't even know how deep these characters were.
Is that an old quote about quiet?
Yeah, that's Hideo Kojima, on hearing criticism about her character design, was saying, once you understand her story, you will be ashamed of your words and deeds. Regardless, that's kind of how I felt, was we're getting into some very serious topics. I know I don't have the greatest history to really be able to relate to these things. I don't want to come across as saying it just kind of bummed me out. But man, it kind of bummed me out.
Yeah, I mean, and he's from Sweden, I think.
I believe so.
I don't know some of the context in Sweden, right? We know the context of queer people in Canada and queer people in the U.S. I don't really know the context of queer people in Sweden, but I bet it wasn't smooth sailing.
No, that's kind of been the one, constant across the globe, unfortunately. But it's just weird because all the heavier topics kind of end up at cross purposes with the nihilistic tone, which is at a third equally perpendicular cross purposes with the really kind of chill vibe gameplay, which we should probably explore a bit more as far as what powers and what exploring the map feels like.
Yeah, so I mean, I played a lot of it. I played for 10 hours. I have, I think, 3/4 of the map explored.
Oh, yeah.
But it's huge. We talked about how you can traverse the world before, in that, so the human form can climb up walls and do kind of wall jump type. Not really wall jump, more, I don't know.
You can jump off walls, but mostly you can climb any vertical surface with impunity.
Yeah, it's more of a cling kind of thing rather than wall kicks.
Yeah, but you can't get up over overhangs.
And then use these flower glowy light abilities, which, I mean, I don't think I have an exhaustive list, but there's go horizontally, go vertically, shoot a laser that is used to, as a puzzle thing, to clear some of the robots.
Yep.
There's make an explosion that will launch you up. There's one that makes you invisible.
Yeah, that one gets very little use.
Yeah.
I think actually beyond chapter one, I didn't see it. It might be in one of the secret bonus rooms that I never got to, though.
There is a quest line in chapter 3 that uses it.
Oh, okay. I just forgot.
I don't remember what it gave me. It was probably a trinket.
The thing is, that's either it's a trinket or it's a coin that can be used instead of a trinket.
Yeah. And then, like we talked about before as well, you have a button that allows you to switch forms into the ball. The ball bounces, it's faster, it can go a little higher by bouncing on the ground, and also you can jump from a high place and then bounce up.
Yeah, there's physics puzzles with bouncing on, like, slopes, you know, get correct angles, as well as, you know, just hot swap after jumping with the ball to start climbing onto a wall instead.
And the magnetism, which is just, like, there are some robots that hold magnets that allow you to magnet to them and swing around.
Basically, when you enter ball form, you've entered the physics dimension, where, okay, yeah, gravity and momentum and all of the and angles suddenly start mattering, and then you can swap back to, I'm just going to climb up and cling to the next available surface.
Yeah, in terms of the moment-to-moment, it's basically like, hey, there's a bunch of rooms that are not going to be very hard for you to traverse, and then scattered throughout, there will be more, like, self-contained puzzles where you'll use one of the flower abilities or use multiple of the flower abilities in combination to go get a trinket or a coin. And the purpose of these is that there are guards in front of the bells, or, well, not exactly in front of the bell, like a couple screens away, who demand payment.
Yes, and they demand payment in the form of most of a certain kind of trinket. Like, okay, I want some flowers. There are 8 in the game. I'll take 5. But you can also use one of the general coins to make up the difference if you don't have enough.
Yeah.
Of course, there are only so many coins in the game. There's no combat. You can't farm enemies for experience or anything like that. There's no leveling up, no additional abilities at all after that first bit.
And there are ways around them, because there's an achievement for not paying them. I never actually figured it out. I thought I had an idea of how to do it using the what amounts for to a fast travel system.
Yeah, the most bizarre, interesting, but also unwieldy fast travel systems I've ever seen.
Yeah, so there are these glyphs, monuments, I don't know what to call them.
Interdimensional bus stops.
Yes, where you can spend another resource, which is also something that you might get from solving a puzzle.
Yep, dimensional crystals, they're called. And again, a limited amount in the game.
Yeah, and what it does is it pops you into a dark realm where it's hard to see things. But in the dark realm, you need to go find a place where letters will glow under you, and that will let you go back to the light realm or real world or whatever and appear in a distant place.
It's like a smaller version of the main map, in a sense, where if you go up a couple of screens in the main map, you've suddenly gone up half the entire zone. Like, all distance is magnified in the dark dimension.
And I thought, I was like, oh yeah, it'll totally be that what I need to do is I need to go into the dark realm somewhere near where one of these bells is, and then find the bell or find a place to appear on the other side of the guard. And it just never ever worked. I always overshot.
I think that is correct still. You need to use the fast travel to get past, like, some sort of blockade. But I think to get to the bells, you have to basically go backwards into some secret, basically invisible path. Because there are a few of those that are usually kind of also hard to get to. Like, you have to do some really crackerjack bounce shifting or carrying power-ups somewhere. I didn't do it myself. I did it regular style.
I did find some secret paths in between places. So, like, the regular paths are revealed when you enter a room, but there are some hidden paths as well that you have to just kind of, like, rub your body on every part of the wall to find.
Yeah, they're usually indicated by, oh, this is a, let's call it a knit-sized outcropping. And if you run into that, it's usually, like, an indication that that's a tunnel.
Yeah.
But not always. And also an annoying thing this game does is, very occasionally, if you do random quests, an NPC asks for one thing, or you get to a certain zone and your fairies start piping up, after a bit there will be an earthquake, and suddenly somewhere on your map there's another opening has just formed out of nowhere, and that you won't know about unless you either check your map if you've seen it already, or it's just somewhere random. So because this is a game where every single square of the map is traversable, like, once you've intuited that, very occasionally there will be points where I'm not sure how to get into the zone, and it turns out I need to do something unrelated other side of the entire game.
Ah, I see.
It's usually related to the personal quests, storylines of the fairies.
Yeah. I totally forgot that the earthquakes were actually doing a thing. I know, like, they say it explicitly in chapter one. And then in chapter three, I was just like, uh-huh, earthquake.
It is a novel thing, like a notable, like, this isn't usual, but it's not clear what happened when that happens. You don't get a marker on your map, usually. Occasionally, the actual act of the thing opening up unlocks a quest, and then there'll be a little queue on your map where one wasn't before, but it's a big map. You might not notice.
Yeah, and there's, like, some notion of quest tracking, but it's pretty limited. They will highlight the last one that you've accepted, and you can reactivate it if you go back to the person and have it highlight the place that it wants you to go.
Yeah, if there's anything notable in a square, it'll also generally have either a question mark or an exclamation mark, just saying, like, there's a goodie to get or a puzzle to solve or just dialogue to have happen. But again, it's your map kind of gets marked up by all of the fast travel points and save points. It's hard to read occasionally once you have, like, the full map.
Oh, yeah. What's up with the other weird dimension? Because the last session I was able to play, I was like, okay, it's time to explore the top left.
Yes.
And then got into a weird dimension of white lines and then appeared in a space I had already explored. And the guy was like, hey, go get this wheel. It'll help you go through that area.
Yeah, so this is a unique area. It's supposed to get you lost as you kind of like double back onto the same screens and suddenly you're in a different area and you warp. After you see it the first time, you get that wheel or mask or whatever. And then when you go back there, it's stable, so you no longer get teleported all around, but you can't use your map. There's another item that allows you to use your map in there, and then it's just like any other zone. Explore it for goodies. It does a fun thing where it'll be the same, basically the same copy of the same screen, like multiple times, that also leads out of it, but is also just leads to a copy of like a grassy area, like four times, just like all one after the other in a vertical plane.
Weird. How Lost Woods.
It was, yeah, it's kind of Lost Woodsy, but also by the time you go back a second time, it's really just wasting your time.
Weird.
If you're just trying to fill all the maps squares, it's a lot of empty rooms, which is unfortunate, but cool aesthetics. Definitely one of the more interesting areas to just kind of stumble upon because no other area messes with you like that.
Yeah.
You know, edit to our earlier complaints about there being no upgrades. There is one. It makes an area traversable. You get it immediately.
Does that really count? I don't know. That's like, that's a key. That's very key.
That's, I would say that's very much a key. But it obfuscated more than the rest of the keys. But yeah.
I mean, like, I actually liked a lot of the individual puzzles. Like, I was having fun with it. The one thing that I kept not doing early on was a lot of the puzzles require you to get a power-up, wait for it to regenerate, and then use the original one to go through that one to pick up a second one as you're using the first one.
Yeah, it doesn't tell you that you can, while you're flying with the power-up, you can grab another copy or some other power-up as well. It's, the puzzles, I think, are generally good. Like, individually, if this was just a, like, platformer, I think it would do pretty well. Because, like, what I was surprised about, in addition to the power-up juggling puzzles, is the fact that the physics-based ball-bouncing ones worked more often than I would have thought. Where it's just like you have to bounce pretty hard into a sharp angle and hold the right directions, and it was pretty consistent.
There's definitely some that I was like, okay, I feel like this is saying you should be able to ball bounce this, but I did not know how to do it.
Maybe this was an expectational thing where I assumed it would have been trash. but I actually was able to get through those rooms consistently once I knew, okay, yeah, I just hold left until I hold right, and the ball just bounces where it needs to.
Yeah, well, the ones that I never figured out were mostly things involving, like, hey, somehow get up to an opening above you.
Okay.
And it's like, I don't know, maybe those were actually places that I needed to come through the other way, but then I'd go to the other side or, like, circumnavigate it and not find an opening. And maybe there were secret paths, I don't know.
Maybe.
Or maybe there were earthquakes that I needed to earthquake.
You can never know. It's in your mind now. Maybe there's an earthquake there somewhere.
Yeah. Well,
or you just need to drop from higher up. There are definitely secret goodies based around doing non-standard things with the ball. Don't quote that out of context. I got precisely one of them. It's just an alpha symbol that's kind of very silhouetted in the background and one part of the map that it's not clear that it is a puzzle until you see that thing and get curious, which again, you manage to do by really like transferring some momentum from where it shouldn't be able to get through into like a tunnel, into a bounce, into a really tricky wall jump. There's some things there. And I would say for most of the game, which is just pattering around as your little person or the ball, chill vibes. I liked it. It reminded me of Aquaria, being able to just kind of zone out and do some pure platforming for a while.
Yeah.
The game just needed to learn to shut up. Because speaking of the vibes, this is a game that has very minimal music, instead relying on ambience and foley.
I mean, I would count a fair amount of it as music.
Like, I can't picture it in my mind. All I remember is it, like, it fades into the background of the pitter-patter of your person's steps or the dripping water or the rushing wind. I think the foley, the sound effects are really good. For all the negative things I'm saying about this game, A+, great job.
Yeah, I mean, I liked the music that I heard. I don't know, it did a good job of in some of the, like, fuzzier areas, I guess is how I'm going to describe them.
Sorry. Speak on that.
Like, there's ones that are just kind of, like, the edges, rather than being, like, sharp and smooth, are just kind of, like, blurry down at the bottom of the map.
Oh, like in the darkness?
Yeah, in the darkness. And I don't know, there's music that creeps in while you're down there, then it was like, oh man, I'm digging this.
Yeah, maybe I'm being too reductive by saying it fades in the background. It just kind of fits so well that like my mind's turned off and I just am appreciating it passively.
Yeah.
But I guess like what stuck out in my mind is all the incidental effects there, which one of which you never found because you never rung a bell.
Oh no.
Yeah, when you ring a bell, it's a very loud, like, bong, you know? You've heard a bell before.
Yeah, I've played Dark Souls.
Yeah, exactly. But, like...
the only time I've rung a bell?
You've never called for a waiter or a servant's help?
Yes, our completely unrelatable podcast in which we summon our servants by ringing a small bell. While we sit around in our dressing gowns.
Anyway... I had a point. Right. Okay.
Sorry.
The bell, it's very loud. It makes all the other sounds in the game for a while very muted, as though you've still got like the like tinnitus, as like in the distance it's still fading, this echoing just peal going off. It's a very effective thing of like, you know, this is still the main quest and one of the few like bursts of presentation that I feel like I should mention.
That's fair.
Great bell sounds. Put that on the back of the box.
Great bell sounds.
Love it.
Yeah, the other thing that we are bad about talking about is artwork.
Ooh.
Yeah, this one, not so great. Like, almost all the areas are the, like, actual interactable...
geometry.
The geometry is just black.
Black, rectangular, harsh angles, except for when you need to go all ball physics.
Yeah, I mean, there are some, like, doodads, right? There's machinery and stuff, which actually look pretty cool. I don't know, they've certainly got an aesthetic. And then in the background, lots of, like, macro art, like, of flowers and grass and stuff and trees, I don't know.
And occasionally just really big fruit, just kind of hanging out. If I'm not sure if you went to that area.
I don't remember it, but maybe.
Yeah, I know, just big melons. This isn't that kind of game. Like, yeah, just strawberries, like all kinds of stuff. Bananas.
Yeah, it's fairly minimal, but like has a vibe just for the like environment art.
The environment art also varies between the different zones. And yeah, it's part of the vibe. That's fine.
And then there's the characters and the robots. And they're just kind of eh.
I found the character designs of all of the blown up portraits when you start like talking to people very off-putting. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's not an aesthetic that I was able to appreciate. It is very, if you want to say, deviant art-ish.
I suppose.
I don't know how to describe it. Like, if you're really curious, you can look it up. But it is flat colors, very odd body and face shapes.
For some reason, it calls to mind, like, trying to make a gamer comic in the early 2000s, but you can't really draw. I don't know.
You've got MS Paint.
And yeah.
I say that through gritted teeth. Because I'm not an artist myself. My ability with the visual medium is far worse than this, but it still does not create a cohesive style that I think really sells itself.
And like some of the characters I think are even on top of that sort of intentionally ugly.
Yeah, but it's hard to tell because they're not that different from everyone else of their ilk.
And I guess Mii's body is, I don't know, a very simplistic doll-like stick figure type thing.
Yeah, I think a paper doll aesthetic, but none of them move. They're all just portraits.
Yeah.
It's definitely a jarring style shift from the rest of the environment design, which I think is, it works for the scale that they're going for. And then when the portraits get blown up, it's not great.
Yeah.
And then the dialogue happens and it's not great. It's unfortunate because I feel like the game would have been better if it was more like the original NIT, which was very light on any kind of story, more pure. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but I preferred NIT before it was underground.
Hipster cred.
It is what it is. But ultimately, I feel like this game would have been more with a lot less dialogue, which ends up being your main motivating factor in a lot of the ways, doesn't really hold up its end of the bargain. And I think the game is so much bigger than it should be for what is ultimately best enjoyed as a vibes out, explore 'em up.
I mean, like, there were some interesting things going on in it, but it didn't really seem to want to follow the story of those. And I was curious of if that is things that were dealt with in previous games. I'm thinking particularly the conflict that they sort of established between the myriadists,
right,
and the internet.
The internet being the scientists, I guess, of this world, where they're trying to actually use human technology instead of revere it.
Yeah, except a lot of the time they have no idea how things work, as given by the item descriptions, in which you'll find a hot air dryer, or yeah, a hair dryer, that's what they're called. Yeah. I don't know. Hot air dryer.
It's drying your hot air. Yeah. It could not be simpler.
Yeah, a hair dryer, and the description will be like, oh yeah, the internet thinks this is a gun.
It's definitely a gun. So the way endings work is based on what quests you've done.
Yeah.
And so if you get both halves of like the dryer and I think it's power source or something like that, there will be a short vignette of me going and tossing in the lava. And because the Farriser's like, this is a weapon too powerful. We cannot allow it to exist. And then again, the developer comes in and says, oh yeah, 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 definitely that was a weapon. Good job, guys.
Weird.
If you complete the fairy storylines, there'll be a short little follow-up for them. If you could collect all the pixies, you get a statue made in your honor in their little crystal village. I think if you get like a super secret bonus item, which involves...
Is it the diamond?
That you sell for a bunch of money. That's actually, I'm pretty sure, like, oh yeah, we don't have to worry about funds forever. Hooray.
No. Okay.
But there's another one where there's a set of four MacGuffins you can find. And if you put them in the right places in the dark dimension, the fast travel area, and then collect your Enigma device, there's also an extended ending that just kind of gets weird I don't know how else to describe it other than like dream sequence nightmare. Like I didn't get it myself. I just looked it up, but there's value here if you want to keep playing it. I am assuming you won't.
Yeah, maybe. I do kind of want to at least get to the bells myself, but I also maybe just need to move on to the next game so that I can finish that one.
Yeah, you don't have a lot of time, and there are a lot of games. In fact, there are a lot of games in 2012, if I recall.
Oh, nice transition there.
Damn, he's good.
Yeah. So in 2012, I've got the Spike TV Game Awards, which later on became the Game Awards. So it's a totally legit award ceremony. I don't know why I'm being so defensive about this right now. I'm not Spike TV.
You're not Spike TV. Spike TV is not even a thing anymore. We do not, in fact, gotta hand it to them.
Yeah, I don't have to carry water for this.
No. But we will report on it.
Yeah, so the games they awarded, there's The Walking Dead, the game.
Okay, yeah, the Telltale?
Yeah.
Of course.
Halo 4 came out that year.
Oh, wow. That's a while ago for that reboot. Okay. Or not reboot, but, you know.
2012 is weirdly like, wait, that was that year? A lot for me? I don't know. Journey.
Oh, speaking of vibes-based gameplay...
Yeah. New Super Mario Bros. U. That's for the Wii U.
The first time it was released.
XCOM Enemy Unknown. Sound Shapes. I don't actually know that one.
It rings a bell that I've heard the name but never played it. I am assuming rhythm game.
Yeah. Borderlands 2.
Eh.
Dishonored.
Big fan of the Dishonored series.
Yeah?
Oh yeah, no. It's very fun, like clockwork style of stealth 'em up is how I tend to do it. But yeah, no.
Mass Effect 3, controversial ending.
All anyone remembers about that game now.
I know this isn't the only game named SSX, but there is one named SSX from this year, apparently, that won a sports game award.
Sure. It did not reinvigorate the franchise, if I'm remembering correctly.
There are snowboarding games. This one might have been the weird, like, open world snowboarding game, which it turns out it doesn't work because you gotta go downhill.
The world is open as long as it's below your current elevation.
I mean, like, you can just fast travel back up, but that's not, like, gaining any benefits of the open world, I feel. Whatever, this is not about open world sports games. NBA 2K13.
The winner of every sports game is either extreme sports or it ends in 2K current year.
I mean, this one had both a individual sports game and team sports game. So,
they needed to fill airtime.
I don't know. Need for Speed Most Wanted.
Sure.
Persona 4 Arena.
All right.
Which we played. We never got good at it.
No. I think we played it for like a couple of afternoons, maybe.
Yeah, and then went back to Blaze Blue.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we went back to Blaze Blue.
You Don't Know Jack.
Okay, yeah. Was that the first one?
I guess there's no number.
And then it became its own party pack without, you know, You Don't Know Jack. I guess at some point they started to recognize Jack.
Yeah, and things that I wanted to call out, because they're on our list of games that are Metroidvanias or adjacent. For the best independent game, it was won by Journey, but the other nominees were Dust and Elysian Tale and Fez.
I'm not sure about counting Fez, but Dust, I think, is inarguable.
Fez also got nominated for Best Downloadable Game, but lost to The Walking Dead.
Weird. Best Downloadable Game is not a category that can exist anymore, I don't think.
Yeah, it's just too general.
Yeah, I feel like it shouldn't have existed then, but...
I mean, in that time, that would have been, like, the games that don't get a physical release, I think. Although, I assume The Walking Dead got a physical release.
Then again, at that point, it was hard episodic... You always are downloading new episodes, so maybe count it in that sense.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, that's the context of 2012. I guess there's the best game of the decade, which was Half-Life 2. I don't know why they decided to do a game of the decade in 2012.
Are you saying that Spike TV did not take the Game Awards seriously? They spent 2 years.
What was the one that we had one time? The Mountain Dew Fueled by Dew? Award. That one didn't show up this time, so it's
okay.
Somewhat serious.
And this was the last one they did, so clearly taking it seriously didn't work. They needed to bring back the Dew.
I mean, I think this is the last one they did before it became just the Game Awards.
Famously not commercial, the Game Awards.
Yes.
Yeah.
Famously.
Anyway, we're not here to gripe about that. We're here to gripe about where we put Knit Underground in the context of all the other games we've played.
Yeah.
Yeah. How are you feeling?
I don't know. Like, I liked the moment-to-moment gameplay. The conversations weren't grating on me as much, but again, I also didn't finish it, and maybe when it turns out to be kind of a Shaggy Dog story, I would have been like, all right, you didn't go anywhere with this, you just made me listen to people I don't like talk.
Yeah, I think I might have not enjoyed it even earlier, so I think I'm definitely more negative than you are, or would have been.
This is a dumb thing that I keep picking on, because when I visited the Steam page, it made me enter my age. Or my date of birth. Where are the sexual references?
It's mostly implied through dialogue. I don't... as far as I'm aware, unless there's a really super secret sexy room, I think it's just themes of the writing, but I can't think of a specific example that would necessitate that, so...
I feel like he could have gotten away with a lower rating, but he released it.
All the horny Knit fans were so disappointed.
He released it on PS3 and Wii U, so...
Yeah.
I guess maybe he actually went through ESRB, and that's what they gave it? I don't know.
I can only assume, but I didn't see it myself. Like, it does get into heady topics, so, like, you know, at least a T.
I mean, they had lesbians, so...
Yeah.
And it was in the 2010s, clearly, that was enough to raise their... rating for sexuality.
Oh yeah, no, you could hear the pearls being clutched a mile away. Regardless, yeah, it's weird. Again, like we were kind of set up for like, what is in this game, and it turns out it's just some weird dialogue, no smut, unlike Metroid.
Yeah, so I'm having a lot of trouble figuring out where I'm going with this. I had fun with the puzzles. I don't know, the kind of, haha, this is all a bit of a joke on you stuff. It didn't rub me that badly, but I could see if you got into it and the first conversation is with the developer of the game lying to you, I feel like you may be a little set up for... not expecting a epic adventure, even when characters kind of imply that you're going for an epic adventure. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like it's trying to have it two ways, where it's like it's being a little tongue-in-cheek about things, but also bringing up fairly serious topics, and it doesn't shift between those two tones very well.
Yeah.
So it's hard to know what am I supposed to be feeling about this? Is this a comedy bit? Are they just going for like shock value? What? I don't know.
I'm tempted. Yeah, why not? I'll do it. I'm going to put it between Aquaria and Shantae.
Wow.
And it's my new number 25.
Yeah, fair enough. It
somewhere in that range. I still feel like this is really mean to Kirby in The Amazing Mirror. It was a perfectly playable game. I mean, so is this. This is a perfectly playable game.
It's juggling a lot of different like aspects of it at the same time. Like, okay, I enjoyed this bit more. If I cut out the dialogue, maybe that makes it a better experience. Maybe I'm just not appreciating it. Maybe I was in a bad mood. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't appreciate the fact that you're basically on 5 different fetch quests at the same time, and that's the game.
Yeah, there's no real sense of, you know, getting stronger or more capable or feeling progression. It's knowing that I just need to get enough of X in order for the game to be over.
Yeah, and I think I had, like, just because of the way I explored, or maybe because of the way the items are laid out, I don't know, I had, I think, 4 of every item type. And, I mean, I probably could have been paying coins to start getting into the places.
But you can also pay coins to get the fast travel gems or something. You never know when you're going to need coins.
It's true. Also, the fast travel gems were too awesome to use, so I had, like, 10 of them.
That's a real disappointing thing, is that it's a very cool fast travel system. I would love to see it somewhere else, of an extra dimension that's kind of warps space and time and stuff. But the cost was too big for me to really play around with it.
Yeah, trying to get into some of the past the guards areas, I was save scumming it.
Of course.
Because I'm not going to spend my crystals if it's not going to take me someplace that I want to go. but I probably shouldn't have been.
Anyway, for myself, mine's going just under where you were, but also I ranked Shantae higher. So mine's going to be new 26, just under Yoku's, above Spelunker 2. It would be unfair, even though I'm ranking this below like Maze of Gallius, which has a similar, just kind of collect the items, bit more of a progression, definitely a more interesting game that doesn't yell at you. Also had the fun reveal of you're saving your baby from the future. I love that shit.
Yeah, I can respect that. I mean, my Legacy of the Wizard and Maze of Gallius are both up higher too, and that's also below Yoku's.
These are weird lists. Regardless, we'll continue to add to them as we go, and hopefully next week, if you have enough time, we can finish a game of your choosing.
Yeah, so I got some feedback that we should play games that are more relevant to people.
Gotcha.
Which seems to be mostly new releases. Which, to be fair, I think we played exactly two games that released last year.
So? Games are still good every year. Game of the year every year. Unsighted.
That's fair.
Play that.
So, probably, if I wanted to appeal to most people, it would be to play the Prince of Persia game. Apparently, I'm not doing that for some reason.
Oh, no.
But I did get a game that I had forgotten I had kickstarted recently, so we're going to play that, and that way I'll actually get to playing the games that I kickstarted and forgot about.
Finally, yeah.
It's called Absence of Light.
Oh, okay.
It's a twin-stick bullet hell Metroidvania, supposedly.
Supposedly. All of these are always supposedly, and then we get into it just like, eh, it's more of a maze. It's a corner scratcher.
Yeah. I don't remember kickstarting it, but apparently I did.
I have never heard of it, so clearly this is the SEO we're going to need to really...
Yeah, definitely going to be good for our brand.
Yeah. I thought The Darkness was a FPS. Weird.
What? Oh, you're making a joke about Absence of Light.
Sorry.
Maybe we'll see... No, that's terrible. What's the name of the Satan analog from the Dilbert comic? Prince of Insufficient Light?
Phil?
Yeah.
Prince of Insufficient Light. Yeah, the less references to Dilbert, I think, the better. I don't think that brand is quite hot right now.
Oh, yeah, that guy got weird.
That guy got so weird, but that's, I think, outside the bounds of our of what we're doing here. If someone's getting weird on Twitter, don't bring us into it, even if you do know our handle, which is at InvertedCastleP. Email us at InvertedCastlePodcast@gmail.com. Otherwise, Inverted Castle Podcast on other social medias you might know. I think Blue Sky is one of them. Instagram.
Yeah, leave a comment on a YouTube video. I don't know.
But outside of that, I think that's it for us. I've been Eric Fox.
And I've been Thomas Blight.
And remember, kids, always listen to the asshole fairy. It's just more interesting.